from marketing, we move on to finance. Now, when you're talking about finance, you need to be very careful in understanding the monetary system. Now, there are a set of internationally accepted rules, conventions, and support institutions that facilitate international trade, cross-border investments, and reallocation of capital between different nations, which are also there. So you need to be aware of the monetary systems which are in place when you're talking about different markets. Also capital markets, because capital markets provide you economic efficiency by channelizing money from those who are not to have an immediate productive use for it. So you need to be also aware of how the capital markets are performing in that particular country. Now, here is a list of the various capital markets. Now, if you find most of the exchanges which do exist are existing, most of the headquarters you will find in major cities. So, like for example, the New York Stock Exchange, which is in United States, you will find the headquarters in New York, and you will find the capital size and also the trades. And so, there's a list of various stock exchanges all over the world, which you can find even in your books, which you can please refer. To understand of the various locations that the headquarters are located, various economies, the market size, the market capital, and also the trade volumes that they generate. Then we come to working capital. Now, working capital management is very, very important. Now, what is basically working capital? Working capital is the capital which you require for your functioning, for your day-to-day functioning. So, this has impact on your profitability, your liquidity, and your overall performance as an enterprise, irrespective of its nature. So working capital management becomes very, very crucial and essential if you are talking about managing a particular firm. Now this also will involve your managing of your cash balances. So too much of cash balances also would be not good overall, but too less of the cash balances also would not be good. Your accounts receivable, what is your accounts receivable which are there? What is your inventory levels that you are going to manage? Because inventory also, sometimes people carry huge amount of inventories, and this results in the huge inventory carrying cost. So you need to be careful about keeping your inventory at an optimum level. Again, keeping low inventory also is not going to help you, because you may lose on the sales part. So you need to have an optimum level of inventory at any point of time. Also your current liabilities, what is your outpays which is there, which you need to be aware of. So your working capital basically will comprise of all this: your cash balances, your account receivables, your liabilities, your outwards, inwards, and your inventory levels. Now here, if you find the working capital management methods which are listed over here, now there is international cash management, which talks about various other methods. There's international sales, which talks about the various methods which are available, and your foreign exchange activity, which talks about the various rate like spot rates, currency swaps, and options. So this gives you a fair idea about the working capital methods which are available. Now, international cash management. Now, cash management becomes very, very important, because you cannot function basically without cash. Now, this is aimed to controlling your cash flow and liquidity of organization doing business in several countries in the world. So if a company is doing business in various countries, they also need to be monitoring what is the cash flow that is happening. How much of cash is coming in and how much of cash is going out. Now it administers the processes and risk so as to maintain a cash flow and a capital adequacy. Now it is very important to maintain that cash flow. Now the main objectives of cash management will be to maximize the return by proper allocation of short-term investments, to minimize the cost of borrowing by borrowing in different money markets. Like many times what happens if you're talking business about locally, you try to borrow from various banks who give you different benefits and different interest rates. Same time you're talking about internationally, you can borrow funds from different markets which give you different interest rates overall. Now, to achieve goal of working capital management in an organization, you must take the following into account. One is to understand the tax structure of various countries, because there are various different tax structures in different countries. What is the political environment in that particular country, or whether the risk involved over there politically. The cost of getting funds in a particular currency, because every time you can't just transfer funds because every time you transfer fund, there is a cost involved in transferring, there is a fund cost involved in converting, and so on. Foreign exchange risk levels of an organization, what is the foreign exchange risk levels, how much risk levels are we taking on this? So the company has to also manage to see what is the exports and import levels, so that they don't have to buy a lot of foreign currency from the market, open market. The extent of risk level acceptable to management. Now the management also have to set clear guidelines that what is the foreign exchange risk or the exchange risk that they are ready to take every time and again. This will help them to make clear cut decisions about their cash flows. Talking about accounting systems and standards. Now there are various accounting systems which are available in the internationally. So international organizations investing in emerging markets need to know about basically these two accounting systems which are very widely used. One is GAAP, which is generally accepted accounting principles, and the IFRS, which is the International Finance Reporting Standards. Now there is a differentiation sheet which is given in your textbooks, which you can refer, which talks about the various differences of both these systems which you need to understand. These are some of the major differences which both the accounting systems have. Now tax consideration. Now this basically you need to understand that what is the tax structure in various countries, because various countries offer you a different kind of tax structure. Like for example, if you talk about regional wise, if you classify regional, break up the countries region wise, you'll find Europe being the lowest corporate tax of 19.35%, lower even than the average of Asia, which is around 21%. Whereas in America, you have an average of 27.21%, and Africa of around 28.24%. This chart which you see on your screen will give you the levels of the tax rate in various in regions like Oceania, Africa, Latin America, South America, Americas, North America, globally. Global average is here. No, and so it gives you a fair idea of graphically about what are the various tax levels in various regions. Now this is talking about region wise, not about country specific. So tax haven. Now what are these tax haven? A tax haven is a basically a benefit given by some countries to come and invest money in their particular country into various activities and to start trading with their countries. You can set up various plants for manufacturing or for trading and so on. So basically a tax haven is a country in or a place with very low effective rate of taxation for foreign investors. In some traditional definitions, a tax haven also offers a financial secrecy. So there are a lot of countries available who are inviting a lot of foreign investors to come in the country and invest in either manufacturing or trading and so on. Now, the list of some of the popular countries of which give you tax haven is which are on your screen is Andorra's, the Bahamas, Bermuda, the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands, the Channel Islands, the Cook Islands, Hong Kong, even Monaco, Mauritius, St. Kitts and Nevis, and a list, big list. So if you want to avail some tax haven, now this is also popular when you're talking about India. Like there are also regions in India where you will find that people, that the government is inviting you to invest in that particular region and they are giving you some sort of tax rebates. So this is similar to that kind of system, but this is, we are talking about at the international scale where the country is inviting foreign investors to come and invest in the country and also to avail some sort of tax relief. Now we are talking about human resources. So moving from finance, we move to human resources. Now international assignments or the act of sending employees to different countries on project assignments is a growing trend. It has been a trend always, where people have been sent on various tasks or various projects to new locations, to different countries by their companies. So it is still on a growing trend. Now, survey shows that destinations for international assignments are shifting towards emerging markets such as Brazil, India, and China. Now, IT industry, which is an apex body, the NASSCOM, which is there in India, has played a vital role in the growth of this Indian IT industry, which you will also find a case study at the end of your chapter on NASSCOM. Now, talking about human resources, different country environments you have, we need to be aware of, and some of the factors which will be there, we will find in a different country environments is, one is cultural factors, second economic factors, then there is manpower cost, and there is industrial relations factor. Let's see what are these factors. First being cultural factor. Now, wide ranging cultural differences exist. Even when we talk about our Indian context, we find a huge cultural difference in various locations or various states in India. And here we are talking about various countries. So you can expect there will be a huge cultural difference from country to country, and needs formulation of or a country-specific HR practice for that particular organization. Now, you can't have a generalized HR practice for all branches or all throughout the world. So you need to have a country-specific practice. Like, for example, in Japan, there is a trend of a lifetime employment experience, where people do not jump companies, as we see anywhere else. So why, if there is a trend of a lifetime employment experience, now the HR has to design policies which will be suitable for such kind of experience. Then we come to economic factors. Now, in economic factors, variation in different country economies also impact the country's business environment. So if a country economy is stable, the business also would be in a stable manner. If the country economy has instability, then the business also would be in an unstable state. Like, for example, also if I have to give an example, is in a free economy based country. Now, the HR schemes will be basically to support value productivity, efficient workers, and reduction in HR cost as per market conditions. Whereas if you talk about a socialist based country or a communist country, such decisions are not possible, and HR schemes will tend to avoid unemployment in place of efficiency. So in a socialist country, the avoiding unemployment is more important than efficiency. Whereas when we talk about a country which supports free economy, where we talk about more of efficiency, it will be a prime focus. Then there is manpower cost. Now, difference in manpower cost may also produce different HR practices. For example, HR manpower cost is looking for efficiency. Now, HR schemes, HR can come up with different schemes like pay as you perform or deliver. So in this kind of scheme, the HR pays the particular employees as and how they perform and as and how they deliver. So there will be a lot of incentive based incentives which will be offered to a particular employee based on his performance and his delivery. Then you have the industrial relationship factor. Now, this is a relationship between the worker and his union and the employer. Now, this can vary considerably from one country to another country. Now, in some countries, you find that there is no scope of union. The union practices are not available. Whereas, you find a lot of countries where you have a workers' union, and the workers' union is one who negotiates with the employer the various benefits that are available to the particular worker. Now, this may have a impact on various HR schemes which are available. Now, recruitment of people. Now, being in a different country environment, the recruitment of people also is very challenging. Now there can be only there can be two type of recruitment, which can be internal staffing and there can be an expatriate staffing. Now what is internal staffing? When own staffing department that sources candidates globally. So you have a staffing department which is there, which can source candidates globally and then they can place. Where you have a expatriate staffing, normally for senior positions, senior level positions which are there are filled by locals in both HQ and as well as other locations. Now here are some of the characteristics of a successful international executive. Now this would also be some of the also apply if you can apply for even for a local executive, where you'll find sensitive to cultural differences, business knowledge, courage to take a stand, bring out the best in people, act with integrity, insightful, is committed to be to success, take risk, use feedback, and so on. So this gives you, this chart will give you the various characteristics, and it will also give you the various description of the characteristics which are there. So please to read the characteristics and see where you also can stand, or what of the characteristics do apply to you, and what are the qualities which are not, which you can still inculcate in yourself, and see that you can become a successful executive in the international market. Finally, the closing case. This case, as we said, I mentioned a few slides before, is about NASSCOM. Now, NASSCOM is a not for profit industry association which is there in India. Basically, this is for the IT industry. Now, this basically case study talks about how NASSCOM has made progress, or they have been able to make a lot of efforts constantly to support the IT industry. This chart shows you the growth of the IT industry from in different year segments, from up to 2000, then 2001 to 2010 and 2011 to present day, and the amount of growth, or the phenomenal growth that has been made in the IT industry. Thank you.